Hello, and thank you for joining us on Weekend Warriors Hockey, the official podcast of the Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy. I'm Austin Holthouse, and co-hosting with me are Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy founder, Rick Parisi, and Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy head coach, Rob Boyle. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may get your podcasts. You can also listen to us on our website, weekendwarriorshockey.buzzsprout.com. Welcome back, everyone, to Weekend Warriors Hockey. We're so glad you are joining us. I'm Austin, and joining me today are the brains of the operation, Rick Parisi and Coach Rob Boyle. Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Great, Austin. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. Rob, you doing all right?
Everything's good.
Very good. All right, awesome. Last week, we did our first player profile with Damon Carr. If you're interested in listening to a player profile, please go give episode 7 a listen. So in episodes 5 and 6, Coach Rob introduced some defensive strategies, and we had goaltending coach Mike DeLaverne come on and follow that up with some goaltending perspectives on approaching defense. Today, we wanted to discuss kind of some general tips, tricks, and techniques, if you will, that all players should probably follow. And we don't want to get into anything specific as far as systems or anything like that, but we wanted to touch on kind of some golden rules, if you will, when you're out playing hockey. So I wanted to start out and first kind of talk about, and Rob, this is probably need your help to explain a little bit how this works and what expectations might be, but basically knowing what your job is in all three zones and do it each time for a hockey player, trying not to do another teammate's job, because it usually will lead to not only your teammate not being able to do your job, but you not doing your job. And we've hit on it before a little bit, but hockey's a thinking man's game. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a tough question, especially when it comes to adult hockey league players, because with our clientele, we get a lot of players who are just learning the game or been out of it for a little while. And maybe they had some structure 25 years ago, but really, because you don't play with or practice any type of structure in your beer leagues, it's really difficult to, what do your job. And we have talked about, cover your points and, well, what does that mean? So when you talk about, make sure you're not doing somebody else's job, it's important to make sure you know what your own is to start with, and understanding that it's going to change every second that you're on the ice. So I think that, when it comes down to that, when we talk about a camp, we don't really get into structure with regards to team play. So we try to give some individual tactics that players can use in their game. So, make sure that they're in the right spot. But what really comes down to in adult league hockey is that, everybody at some point will start chasing, right? We all start chasing the puck and, oh, well, this guy's wide open, so I got to leave my spot to go to his spot or her spot. And that just creates more problems. So, it is a difficult thing. So you're right. The first thing is to know, what are you supposed to be doing in this particular scenario? Like I said, it changes all the time, and it doesn't matter if you're in the offensive zone, neutral zone, defensive zone, you really need to know what it is, you're supposed to be doing, in comparison to where the puck is, to where you are, to where, whether you're defending or you're going on offense. What can you do to make it easier for your teammates? We always say smarter, not harder. And those are the type of things you got to kind of look at. What can I do to make this easy on my teammates, to make it easier on myself? Where do I go? Where's the puck going to go? You have to have a little bit of anticipation. Read and react are all common things that we talk about as coaches.
Yeah, and I think that takes us back a little bit to that first discussion we had about, especially in the defensive zone, which was defending the house. And if from a defensive perspective, you view the world through limiting those high danger areas for shots, it can help you, I think, as a player and as a team, recognize where to expend your energy and where to go, where to not go.
Yeah, it's not just the high zone too, though. I mean, we talked about in our defensive zone, or just when we're on defense, protecting the guts of the ice, the middle of the ice, between the dots. So I want to make sure that I have more people in that area, so it's going to be more difficult for an offensive player to get through. So you're saying, okay, so what's my job? Well, I want to stay to the middle, whether I'm in my defensive zone. If I'm on defense and neutral zone, I want to come back through the middle. You know, and so it's a little thing like that, a little concept like that. You got to think about, you know, I always tell players, even players that I've coached, so even, you know, high level players, the physical part for them is pretty easy, right? I have an athlete that's playing travel, junior or pro, right? The physical part for them is easy. It's the mental part. It's the mental part that you have to try to keep building and constantly reinforcing over and over again as a coach. So when we tell our campers, you know, stay to the middle of the ice, stay in between the dots, protect between the dots, that's just one thing that we're trying to give them, one piece of information. If you get lost out there, get back to the middle, all right? Without really telling them where to go or what to do. Just, I know I got to be in the middle. I got to protect the house. That's just one of those things that, you know, again, without doing any type of team structure, a little pointer like that can go a long way in having success in your games.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the, you know, those topics we hit initially, the guts of the ice and the house, I think if practiced will help people do their job without, you know, wingers finding themselves behind their net in the defensive zone when they probably shouldn't be. Sometimes maybe they should be. You have to think when you're playing hockey. There's no doubt about that. And we've hit that a couple times already. And if you played for any period of time, you know, like you said, Rob, even the guys that are in juniors and professional level and stuff like that, while the physical stuff they've got, it's the continually having to think about every aspect of the game, every different situation that you're playing in.
Oh, and junior players and pro players make the same mistakes as beer league mm-hmm. players. I mean, it's funny to watch. You can watch a game and they make the same mental errors. Not as many of them, but usually when there's a breakdown, it's usually a mental error. And so, I mean, as beer leaguers, we can take solace in that and say, "Hey, you made the same mistake I did." You know, so. It is the mental part of the game that can really make one player more successful than another.
Yeah. And that's where taking the time to be responsible for your own training and getting better, I think, is important. Spending the time doing it, as we've said before, you know, one game a week, you're probably not going to improve that much. You got to find that time and space to study, whether it's watching professional games. I think you can learn a lot from watching games or hitting the ice for stick and puck or pickup or something like that, especially to play with people who are better than you are generally will help you become a better player. All right, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about, and I think that leads us right into the next one, which would be communicating not only with your line mates, but with your teammates. And I think, especially in beer league, you can get into a situation where you're either new on a team and you don't tend to communicate a lot with folks, or you've been on a team. You know, I'm lucky enough that I've been on the same team for a couple of years now. I know the players really well. We tend sometimes not to talk, even though we know each other, as much as we probably should to figure out where we're supposed to be and how we want to play. So I'm talking about communicating before the games, after the games, about kind of a little bit about how you want to play, not talking about drawing stuff up on a whiteboard, but also communicating with your line mates and teammates when you're out on the ice.
Well, communication before the game's probably, what are we doing after the game? Where are we going to go for beers after the game? That's what it's like in my dressing room. I can tell you that with the guys I played with for the last few years. So there's not a whole lot going on in there. But you know, when you get on the ice, you're right. You need to have that communication, whether you're on offense or defense. It's important to help your teammates out. Again, we talk about support. You know, you don't want to just be a physical support. You want to be a verbal support. You know, man behind you. Skate it out, wheel, shoot, stick on the ice, and that's from your goaltender to defenseman to forwards. Everybody's got to be involved with the communication process. So, you know, it's a real easy thing. But just make sure you're taking care of your own business as well. Sometimes we get caught up, or some players can get caught up, you know, communicating too well. And then all of a sudden you forget what you're supposed to be doing. And all of a sudden the guy behind you is open and they get the puck and the puck's in the net. So I think it's very important on both sides of the ice. You know, sometimes you're going down on a 2-on-1 and, you know, you might not be in a great position to get the puck. And you got to communicate to your teammate, shoot, shoot. Don't worry about pass. Let them know it's okay to shoot the puck. but sometimes we want to be a little unselfish when we're going down to 2-on-1. The bottom line is you have to get a shot. So don't be afraid to communicate that as well. Shoot, you know. We get into the offensive zone. Sometimes we get our back turned to the play. Make sure you have support on both sides of the puck. I'm open, down low. And if you are familiar with your teammates, use their names or nicknames or whatever you have for them. Obviously we have, there's obviously the easy and most used form of communication is what's that?
You're going to say tapping the stick, aren't you?
Don't tap your stick. Do not tap your stick. Crying out loud.
I thought that was universal. Give me the
puck. That's Rob's favorite.
Yeah. Do not bang your stick. I want you to either talk verbally and make sure that's the most common and easiest form of communication. But if you know, other ways are eye contact. You know, sometimes you have that nonverbal communication that's very important. Having your stick on the ice and being ready for the puck is a form of communication. So all these things can come into play when you're on the ice, whether you're on offense or defense. But communication is any coach will tell you is an absolute important skill to have in your toolbox when you're playing the game.
Yeah, back in episode 6, Mike DeLaverne made that very, very clear that the communication piece was huge, especially from the goaltender's perspective, with players covering in their defensive zones and things like that. So definitely. I think again, there's a couple pieces there. It's the on ice play communication and chatting about how you want to approach stuff before and during a game as well. So, okay.
And just another, a little terminology that you can use for, you know, things like, you know, like, yep. Like you don't have to, you know, say, pass it to me. It's just, yep. I'm open, or nope. Like maybe you realize you're covered. You don't want, you're playing the point and your guy might drop it back to you. Say no.
Simple things like that. And especially as you get to know your teammates, and if you're playing with, like you said, playing with players for a long period of time, you kind of develop your own language and you recognize voices. So it doesn't have to be a lot of verbal stuff. So that is, Rick's exactly right. That's what, I mentioned Jamie last week when we played beer league together and we were defense partners, it was always easy to communicate and we kind of had our own thing going and we knew exactly where each other were. And it would just be a little thing exactly like that. Rick would be, yep. Nope. And then the communication was, we knew exactly what each other wanted and what each other needed to happen. And so as you get to know your teammates and become familiar with them, especially if you play with them long periods of time, it becomes a much easier thing.
Yeah. One of the things I noticed was, I got in the habit of calling to send the puck in deep. And I had a teammate who thought I was saying D. So being on the same page about what you're trying to say and how it comes out, especially in a quick, when you're trying to say deep, they thought I was trying to say D. And so the puck kept ending up back at a defenseman that they weren't expecting it. So, you know, that's one of those things just to be careful with. And so I had to kind of adjust my, what I was trying to say, which might've been like, you know, corners or something like that. So It can happen where even when you're talking, it's communicated differently than what you think it is. So
very true.
You can also communicate on the bench, like after your shift with your line mates and make that communication, not, I was open, man. Why didn't you pass it to me? You know, it's more of a, you know, hey, next time, or this is, you know, I'm an option here, you know, communicating in a positive way. So, you know, you're not letting them, you know, giving them the business, basically, instead just, you know, trying to do something positive.
Yeah. And a lot of times I've found that your line mates see things that you may want to overreact and say they didn't see you open, but on the bench, they're like, look, I saw you, but I thought the shot was better at that point in time. Yep. So
absolutely,
that's always good to have that communication that, hey, I saw you. I couldn't get it to you, or I thought the shot was a better option, or yeah, I really messed that up. I should have passed it. So I think we do see more sometimes than we give each other credit for. And people think, oh, his head's down. He's a shoot first person. He's never going to pass it to me. But oftentimes they see you, they know you're there. But they just make a decision to shoot or sometimes to pass when they shouldn't have. So, all right, let's, let's move over to our favorite thing that all forwards love to do with reckless abandon at all times. Let's talk a little bit about the art of back checking. I hate it more than anything else. It is hard. It takes a lot of effort and energy, and I'd rather use that energy going forward towards the goal than back towards my own net. So, Rob, what are your thoughts on back checking, and is it really that important?
Well, let's clear something up, and Rick knows where I'm going to go with this one. back checking is not pushing somebody or hitting somebody in the back. That was the actual question we had at the camp many years ago, and I kind of pushed it off like he was joking, because we were talking about the subject of back checking, and he raised his hand and he said, "What's back checking?" And everybody laughed, including myself. And I never really did answer the question. So when we were talking the next day in our chalk talk, he raised his hand again and said, "No, really, what's back checking?" And then at that point I realized he didn't really know what it was. And he thought it was exactly that, cross checking in the back or pushing in the back. But back checking obviously is, a form of defense. You know, we're transitioning from offense to defense. We want to get back to our zone as quickly as possible. And then there's two terms that we have. One is back checking, one's back pressure. Back pressure is if you're the first back checker and you want to get back, you want to be able to put puck pressure or body pressure on the puck carrier as soon as you can. So you're in close proximity. You know you can get to the puck carrier quickly and force him to the boards and keep him to the outside. This allows your defenseman to stay in the middle for puck retrievals or for a pass coming into middle. So, you might hear that expression a lot, back pressure. Oh, he got great back pressure if you listen to a game. So that's that first forward coming back and putting pressure on the puck carrier immediately. And then back checking is you don't have that opportunity, but you still have to get back into the zone as quickly as possible. So we want to get back in our defensive zone quickly. A key thing is maybe we want to make sure that we're coming back through the middle of the ice in between the dots, because we still want to protect the dots, because something's probably going to come cross ice. So when you're back checking, come back through the middle and get back into your zone. If you're the first four checker back, or sorry, back checker back, you want to make sure you're going to be that puck support. So you got to support that first defender. You want to get back. You're going to come to the puck. You're not going to go right on the puck, but you want to be there and support the defenseman in case there is a loose puck, and maybe take their first support guy and take that option away from him as well. Your second back checker into the zone is going to be your strong side winger. So, and it doesn't matter. Well, let me finish. So your second forward back is going to come to the strong side and take away that option. And your third back checker is going to come back and they're going to kind of protect the middle top slot and help out the defenseman in front of the net. What I was going to say is it doesn't matter if you're a center, right wing, or left winger. If you're the first forward to get back, you want to go down low and help out support. In an ideal situation, we would love it for to be the centerman. There's no question about it. And you can switch off at some point. But, you know, if you're the first player back and you're a winger, you don't want to stay up at your wing when everything's happening down low and you're the only forward back in the zone. You got to get down low and take away that first support option and help out your defenseman. And then the other two players would have to adjust coming back into the zone. So you have F1 coming back to support the puck, F2 support the strong side, F3 support high slot net front area.
Yeah, excellent. Guys, that takes us to about 19 minutes. So I think what I wanted to do was keep it short. We've got a couple more topics, but we certainly will have plenty of time to talk about those. But I wanted to get over to Rick for a coronavirus update. If he's got some things that he knows, and for those who are listening, we're on the 15th of April. So I don't know how relevant this will be when you listen to it, but this is kind of where we are right now. So Rick, what do you got?
Yeah. So today would be under normal circumstances and in the old world be travel day to Pittsburgh for our first camp of the year. Obviously that's not happening. So both Pittsburgh and Shelton have been postponed to later in the year. We're still waiting to have dates. The Atlanta camp has been canceled, and we are still hopeful that we're going to be able to start our season off in Lake Tahoe. So again, you know, looking for new dates for Pittsburgh and Shelton, Connecticut, and waiting to see, hopefully going to make a call on that by next week for Lake Tahoe.
What are the Lake Tahoe dates again?
May 14th to 17th.
Okay.
A month.
So at this point, first camp will be about a month from today. So We hope so. Fingers crossed. All right. Well, thanks, gentlemen, for the discussion today. We'll get into some more of these kind of things in the next couple episodes. So thanks everyone for listening. Please, during this downtime, do your best to, if you can, find a workout of some sort, find a YouTube video or something to practice some of your skills and stay sane instead of just inside your house all the time. Pick up a stick and do a little bit of work. And everyone, please stay safe, and we'll talk to you next time.
Wash your hands.
We hope you enjoyed our episode and are motivated to learn more about how you can improve as an adult hockey player. If you have show ideas, disagree with anything we said, or just want to say hi, please contact us. Simply email us at info@weekendwarriorshockey.com or leave a message on Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy Facebook page, Twitter, or Instagram sites if that's easier. We love to read responses and listener questions on the air. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may get your podcasts. Share us with a friend or two or three and leave a 5-star Apple Podcast review if you enjoyed the show and want to learn more. Until next time, keep working hard and improving each time you're out on the ice.